Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to talk about a topic relating to Nazi Germany that's been greatly debated, and there's been, shall we say, more heat than light that's emerged over this one, and that's the relationship between Nazis and kind of monopoly capitalism. We're not talking about small businesses here, but the big conglomerates, Krupp, IG Farben, that kind of thing. And the attitude of business to the Nazis varies. There were some big magnates such as Fritz Thyssen, who was delighted with the advent of Nazism, not only as he saw it as being great for business, but also for his own ideological reasons. Thyssen particularly believed that throughout the 1930s, Labour had gained too much power. So too much power now rested in the hands of the working classes and the trade unions, and Hitler would be a corrective to that. However, there were plenty of industrialists, particularly those who were looking to export, who were very wary of Hitler's plans, and particularly Hitler's economic plans as they pertained to autarky, and they increased levels of state deficit spending and the intervention of the state in industry, the kind of coordination and direction of industry. These were classical economic liberals who believed that the state should have a limited night watchman role only, that the state's only function was to ensure that law and order was maintained and the country was protected from foreign interference. Now, the interventionist nature of the Nazi state shouldn't be confused with kind of classical Keynesianism, the likes of which were proposed by Roosevelt in the New Deal. Hitler isn't an economic thinker, doesn't really understand economics, isn't particularly interested in it. He is a racial thinker. Hitler believes that the realm of the economy is only valuable as long as it helps him to pursue and support racial goals. And therefore, intervention in the economy was designed to firstly prepare Germany for war, to create a people's community, the Volksgemeinschaft, where there was social unity in the workplace, and that industrial disputes were subsumed to kind of racial objectives. People didn't think of themselves as workers or bosses, but Germans. The Reich Association for German Industry, the main pressure group for industrialists, decided that they were going to really frustrate Hitler's plans and to throw a spanner in the works of the increasing control that Hitler planned for German industry. Fritz Thyssen was very critical of this, and he said at a meeting in March 23rd, 1933, the General Secretary of the Reich Association actually managed to intervene with the Reich President on the day before Hitler's appointment as Reich Chancellor. By Reich President, obviously, they mean Hindenburg. Even after Hitler's appointment, the Reich Association attempted to form a front with the trade unions against the government. On the day before Hjalmar Schacht's appointment as president of the Reichsbank, a meeting summoned by the Reich Association took place, or a meeting of the members of the General Council of the Reichsbank, at which the Reich Association participated. At this meeting, ways and means were discussed where the previous president, Luther, could be kept in office and the choice of President Schacht would be prevented. This is talking about presidents of the Reichsbank here. On the 13th of March, the nationally inclined members of the executive committee had to remind the officers of the association that it was necessary to hang out the swastika flag, the flag of the national uprising, alongside the black, white and red flag. Under pressure from the nationalist section of the committee, the officers were compelled to purchase a swastika flag, and this flag was then hung out by the national members of the committee on the third day of the celebration of the national uprising. Nevertheless, on the 21st of March, the Reich Association still only hung out a black, white and red flag. But this refusal had an unpleasant consequence for the committee, for a detachment of the SA then visited the General Secretary and compelled him to hang out the swastika flag. He, Fritz Thyssen, welcomed this deed, which taught the Reich Association respect for the new flag. So, what resistance there was going to be muted, and it was not really an objection to any of the wider repressive measures of the Nazi regime. It was really a demand by the heads of monopoly capitalism in Germany that the Führer stay off their stay out of their business, out of their business interests. It's interesting to note that the day before Hitler's appointment, the RDI was attempting to influence Hindenburg into not appointing him. So the Nazis overcame opposition within the RDI using pressure from outside and collaboration within. So sending brown shirts around, firstly, was a very direct way of threatening and demanding obedience from bankers and industrialists. But Noakes and Pridham, in their brilliant book, Nazism, a Documentary Reader, I'm on volume 2 here, State Economy and Society, 1933-39. Noakes and Pridham write that on the 1st of April 1933, Otto Wagner, who was the Nazi Reich Commissioner for the Economy, came to the RDI offices and demanded the resignation of the General Secretary, stating that the association had so far avoided taking any notice of the revolution and acted as if everything was as before. Wagner also said that there would have to be replacements on the board of the RDI for the three Jewish members who were there. And they would have to be replaced, not by three, but by two Nazis. This was largely ignored. The press magnate, Alfred Hugenberg, ironically considering how hard he had campaigned to get Hitler into power, said that he was shocked by these demands, but said that he would not intervene on the grounds that basically he trusted Hitler and didn't believe that Hitler would actually do anything wrong or anything unpleasant to Aryan Germans. He was never particularly troubled when Hitler did things to affect the lives negatively of working class Aryan Germans. But that's Alfred Hugenberg for you. Hindenburg also was shocked that the RDI was being targeted in this way, but did nothing. Now, this is all very telling, because all of a sudden, the gamble that the likes of Hindenburg and von Papen had engaged in bringing Hitler into power starts to take different dimensions. They had, of course, bargained on the fact that Hitler would crush the trade unions. They had, of course, bargained on the fact that Hitler would destroy the Communist Party, and these things were all desirable as far as they're concerned. But now, Hitler began to extend his social coordination and coercion to members of the upper classes, members of the elite circles that Hindenburg would have dined with and associated with and seen as friends and allies. And so as this happens, the nature of Nazism begins to become abundantly clear. Firstly, Hindenburg is loath to act because the power that Hitler has is his connection with the masses. You know, as Hannah Arendt said, that fascism is this union, this alliance of the elite and the mob. Well, Hitler was the link there who could speak directly to the mob, to the masses. And so all of a sudden you have a conservative but not necessarily fascist upper class that realises the predicament they're in, and that the fact that they will now have to go along with whatever programme that Hitler has. And pretty soon you find willing accomplices within the upper classes. So the RDI changed its chairman to the head of the Krupp steel industry and adopted a new general secretary who were more than willing to take on board Hitler's demands and to comply with them. On the 3rd of May, Krupp said that he was introducing the leadership principle into the organisation and would use it to bring the new organisation into line with the political goals of the Reich government. So what does that mean? Well, the leadership principle, or the Führer principle, was the principle that had guided Nazism since the mid-1920s.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And it was the idea that there should be unquestioning loyalty and obedience to one single leader. And little Führers across Germany, in local Nazi party associations, in other Nazi-fied organizations were sprung up. And so Krupp here was Nazifying the RDI, taking it from being a kind of liberal free market institution of gentlemen capitalists to being a Nazi institution, and was putting it at the service of the Nazi state. The regime wasn't really content with the replacement of personnel at the top. To make sure that the influence of the Nazi state over business was complete, but without throttling it with too many bureaucratic controls and really instituting a kind of a nationalisation, the RDI needed to change. And the model that presents itself that was easiest to adopt and had already been piloted in Italy was the fascist idea of corporatism. This was not perfect. This was not exactly what German industry wanted, but it stood the best chance of securing the widest amount of independence for German industrialists. Corporatism essentially is this meeting of industry unions and the state to achieve national economic goals set by the government, and the Mussolini's position with all of this was supposed to be that great conciliator, the person who could get industrialists and unionists down to the table and kind of bang heads together. Normally, in corporatism, those with most power at the table to begin with, the captains of industry and the state themselves, are the ones that tend to do best out of the deal. And corporatism really ignores the fact that workers and bosses often have, or perhaps even always have, antagonistic goals. Profit versus wage is a very difficult thing to satisfactorily reconcile. Eventually, the Nazis thought that corporatism would offer too much autonomy to industry, and that an industrial corporatist body might present too much of a challenge in the long run. So instead, in November 1934, the law for the preparation of the organic construction of the German economy was enacted. And the law allowed for the following things. In order to prepare for the organic construction of the economy, the Reich Minister of Economics is empowered, firstly, to grant recognition to economic associations as the sole representatives of their branches of economic activity. So to create economic associations, you know, almost sort of like a medieval guild in a town, and to grant them monopolies. To establish, dissolve and amalgamate economic associations. To alter and amend the statutes and articles of association of economic associations, and particularly to introduce the leadership principle. So that meant that at any time the state could intervene and wind up certain associations and dissolve them, and throughout it all would be the fascist leadership principle. To appoint and dismiss the leaders of these associations, obviously, and to oblige employers and businesses undertakings to join economic associations. Economic associations are those associations and combinations of associations which are responsible for looking after the economic interests of entrepreneurs and business undertakings. So, say for example, steelworkers would have to join an economic association that governed their economic activity, whether they like it or not, whether they feel that's necessary or not. They have to become part of it. And business would be organised hierarchically, or the business world would be organised hierarchically. So at the top there would be the Reich Ministry of Economics. That would control the Reich Chamber of Economics. The Reich Chamber of Economics would then control the various business sectors and the economic associations, industry, handicrafts, commerce, banks, insurance, energy, and tourism. And these would then be regionalised. So there would be different ones for East Prussia, Silesia, Pomerania, and so on and so forth. And it meant that finally, an entrepreneur would ultimately be answerable to the Reich Ministry of Economics. Now, of course, in every country, there are economic ministries, so ministries for controlling finance and for trying to stimulate trade. But most of them have a very diffuse link to actual businesses. They purport to be there to try to, you know, create a positive business environment. And what happens next is you leave it alone, and hopefully businesses will flourish and provide cash for in tax revenue. Hitler was less concerned with all of that and more concerned with a national coordination. Once the entire nation works together as one, it can achieve almost anything. This is Hitler's belief, and that a lack of coordination had so far been Germany's problem. The Nazis, of course, are looking for every reason and explanation as to why Germany lost the First World War, and national coordination, they believe, was a key cause. Noakes and Pridham write, "This practice of indirect control by the state through a system of self-regulation by business, exercised via a network of business organisations, created a complex and shifting pattern of interdependence between state and business. For although the Reich groups, etc., were obliged to implement regulations issued by the government, at the same time, the state was dependent on the business organisations for their expertise and for their smooth operation of its economic controls. This situation ensured business a measure of autonomy vis-a-vis both state and party." So, a measure of autonomy. Of course, businesses would lack and have been deprived of the full autonomy that, previously they had had. But this brings us on to another key area of looking at not just Nazism, but dictatorships in general. If you look at businesses, individuals, various social groups who may be favoured by the state, may be affected by the state, may fall foul of the state, they're all in a constant process of sort of negotiation and navigation around this new, fundamentally altered player within society, constantly trying to maximise benefit and minimise loss or minimise risk. And businesses were no different. They were presented with incentives and threats, the carrot and the stick, and the carrot was often the new business opportunities that Nazism presented. Despite the problems with or the objection to deficit spending, spending money the state doesn't necessarily have, which is what all states do, by the by. Despite those sorts of objections, when there were lucrative business contracts, businesses reacted in the way that they always do and bid for them and gained them. This principally comes from rearmament and also from the destruction of the trade unions, which made labour markets far more flexible and ensured that pay claims remained at a minimum. And it ensured that the employer remained, as the term came, master in his own house. And the incentives, the threats, I beg your pardon, was the atmosphere of terror in Germany, firstly. Businesses and industrialists were not exempt from the threat of arrest by the Gestapo. And the threat that the regime might, in its populist inclination, favour small businesses, the small business concerns of the Mittelstand, over the capitalist monopoly capitalist conglomerates, because the Mittelstand, the small businessmen, made up the bulk of the Nazi base of support. In most instances, the Mittelstand didn't gain the upper hand in this kind of economic back and forth, as for example in where taxation was most popularly levied and what interest rates suited either party. But we can see by the end of the Second World War and during the period of the Nuremberg trials that there was in the boardrooms of Germany widespread acquiescence with the regime's goals, and particularly obviously when they were profitable, but also there was widespread accommodation of Nazi racial thinking. And the evidence for that comes in 1947 with the last of the Nuremberg trials, which was the industrialists' trial. But we'll talk about more about that another time, I think. Anyway, I hope you found this useful. Please do, if you can, support us on Patreon. It'd be very helpful. And I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.